Blog Talk Radio.
Shout joyfully to the Lord, all the earth. Come worshiping before the throne of God. For the Lord, He is good, and His love endures forever.
Saints of God, good afternoon and welcome to another weekly edition of the End Time News Report with the one and only, the 250 episode broadcaster, Sister Marie. Well, she's already in studio. I'm looking at the board. I see her number already up. She's ready to come in. But before she does, let me just remind everyone, if you are in need of prayer, send us your prayer request at powerofprayer2018@gmail.com. powerofprayer2018@gmail.com. We promise to pray for you and to keep all your prayer requests confidential. Now, there are times when saints will tell us it's okay to share with the other brothers and sisters so that we have more people praying. But we only do that if you give us permission. Again, if you're in need of prayer, send us your prayer request at powerofprayer2018@gmail.com, and we promise to pray for you. Well, Sister AJ is going to be in studio tomorrow to continue her wonderful series on Jesus and Hollywood. And I am so looking forward to today's broadcast because this weekend I had to take care of some kingdom business. And while I was down in the urban city, the center, you know, the urban center, the city, I was confronted with critical race theory. It was all around me. Yes, it was. All around me in the house of God. And so I'll leave it at that. I won't expand, but it's everywhere. Everywhere you go now. And sadly, it's in the church. So, without any further ado, let me bring my sister on because we have a lot of ground to cover. Last week when we did the show, I took up too much time. We didn't waste any time because we were celebrating her 250th episode landmark milestone, and we had to take time out for that. But I took up a lot of time in talking about that, and we really didn't do justice to the show the way it should have been done. So that's why this week I'm going to try to make up for it by keeping my comments short, as my wife always encourages me to do. She always tells me to condense, keep it short. Don't repeat myself. Okay. My dear sister, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. And you?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to this broadcast today. We were getting into it last week, and of course, you know, we just had to pause and celebrate and talk about your milestone. And
thank you.
I know we took up a lot of time on that, and so I want to make it up this week by just, you know, giving you more time, you know, than you normally get, and I cut the announcement short. And let's talk about
this subject. Okay. Well, today we're going to continue with the audio by Daryl Harrison and Virgil Walker of Just Thinking Ministry. And it's titled Black Lives Matter, and that's with a question mark. Again, if you missed any part of the series, please go back and listen to the other audios. They'll give you tons of information on the BLM movement. One thing we need to ask again, and I think it's important, how does this group help black lives? Because no black lives have benefited from the group financially, nor were any black lives given any other kind of support from the group. The truth is, this group is taking thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars from corporations that they claim to be against. And most of these corporations, if not all of them, are owned by rich white men. Bro, your comment on that. That's what I see so far.
Right, and absolutely. And we talked about this when we brought up the name of a young man who used to play in the NFL, Colin Kaepernick,
mm-hmm.
right? He was the quarterback
mm-hmm.
to the San Francisco 49ers. And then he started to take a knee at the games, and that, you know, a knee because of, you know, some African-Americans who were gunned down by the police. And,
mm-hmm.
and so in protest to the national anthem, he started to take a knee. And of course, you know, a lot of controversy. President Trump called him a loser. You know, and listen, that's not new. President
mm-hmm.
Trump calls lots of people losers.
Yeah, correct.
You know, And if you cross him, you know, like Vice President Mike Pence, now Mike Pence is a loser, right? I mean, so it's not hard. It's not hard to get on Trump's loser list,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
Right? So, but anyway, he called Colin Kaepernick a loser and, you know, a nobody
yeah.
and, you know, just a lot of yeah. other things that were unseemly. But here's Colin Kaepernick protesting white supremacy, and then he gets big money from Nike, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But here's the thing: where is Colin Kaepernick today? What has he been doing? Has he been defending? Has he been going into black communities? Has he gone to Chicago? No, he took the money that Nike gave him, and he rode off into the sunset, rich.
Right.
And so now, is he protesting anymore? No more protest. He's gone. He got his big payday, and he's gone. And he might, you know, if his money runs out, he might start up again, you know, if he blows his money. But for the most part, you know, he got his money from Nike. And who knows? He's probably still getting money from Nike.
Right.
But that's it.
And
they
went
don't
off
help
in the
anybody.
Sunset.
Right. They don't help anybody.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. So last week we focused on the 17 scriptures that Daryl presented against the BLM movement. Each one of those scriptures provided or proved that the BLM movement, their behavior and their beliefs are in direct opposition to the Word of God. If you add that to the fact that these people are Marxists and they support the LGBTQ community, that alone should be enough for us to logically conclude that this is an ungodly organization that as a Christian we need to avoid. What do you think?
Absolutely.
I mean,
I don't want to be part of any organization, number one, that is tied to politics. Republican, Democrat, Independent,
right.
Conservative, whatever.
Right.
I don't want to be involved in anything political.
Mm-hmm.
When I go into the voter's booth, I pull my little curtain and I do what I got to do, and it's between me and God, right?
Right.
I do my civic duty that way. But as far as aligning myself with people who have different political persuasions, the answer is no, number one. Number two,
right.
I don't believe in Marxism. I don't.
Right.
I don't believe in a government or in a political system that oppresses the people it claims it's going to help. Because that's what Fidel Castro did. Fidel Castro said to the Cuban people, I'm going to come here and liberate you from this bum called Batista. He's been an awful ruler of Cuba. I'm going to make sure everybody gets everything for free, right? I mean, that was a selling point. Those people are getting on inner tube, car inner tubes to cross 90 miles of ocean to make it to Miami. The shark-infested waters. So how has that worked out for them? Not very good. Not very good.
That's
so
right.
Marxism is of the devil, plain and simple.
Yes, it is.
It oppresses you.
Yep.
Out of all the political systems, it's the one who wants nothing to do with God. Right? Think about it. Marxism says from the get-go, we don't want anything to do with God. Let's get God out.
Yep.
And so, you know, I mean, that's right there. I mean,
it is.
I got to part ways
with
when somebody says,
system.
So that's no good. And then here's the last thing I want to say. We've seen Marxism all over the world. And wherever we've seen it, it has not worked. Show me one place. Please, somebody, show me one place in the world where Marxism has worked for people. and you can't find a place. So then why would I want to adopt something that didn't work anywhere else? Why would I want to adopt it here? People that drank antifreeze died. Why would I start drinking antifreeze?
That's right.
I mean, that's...
People don't realize that.
Right.
They don't realize how bad this is. I mean, this is a takeover of everything we've ever known in the United States. Everything we've talked about and been against in other countries, you know, like China and, you know, South America, you know, everything we've, you know, done shows on and exposed the conditions. This is it. So why are we embracing that? It's crazy. It's really crazy when you think about it.
A present day example is Venezuela. A few years ago, Venezuela was the hottest economy, the richest nation in Central America.
Right.
It was booming, booming economy. Marxism comes in, and what happens? People are starving. Starving.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants that? I don't want that.
Well, that's where we're moving at this point. We're moving, you know, getting rid of the food, the meat sources. We're going to get rid of this, get rid of... It's all a part of the agenda, you know. I think by the time this audio is complete, they should understand everything, you know, there is, the who, the what, and the why of BLM and why it exists. It's Marxism. It's just bringing people in a different way. That's all it is, into Marxism.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's another way to bring people in. You know, think about it. They must have sat down and said, okay, there's all these different diverse groups in the United States politically. You know, we're not like China, you know.
Right.
So they have to go infiltrate each one of these groups with a different message or a different agenda, you know, a different narrative to bring everyone in to this agenda. They have to, you know, appeal to each community, diverse community, to bring them into the Marxist agenda. So I think this is just one of the areas, you know, that they're bringing people in to Marxism. That's how I see it anyway.
Well,
for money.
Let's take, for example, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How much money has his organization received over the many, 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 many years? How much money? Millions.
Oh, I have no
millions.
Idea. Yeah.
Millions of dollars, okay? Who's better for it? You know, the Reverend Jesse Jackson lives in Chicago. In case you listeners didn't know, the guy lives in Chicago. And what is Chicago? A war zone. A war zone among which population? The African American. He's right there. He's right there. Do you hear a word coming out of his mouth? No. And I know he was sick. I know he had COVID. How about the Reverend Al Sharpton? Have things gotten better for African Americans since he got on the scene? I would argue that things have gotten worse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
See, and this is it. When you're a race hustler, when you're a tithe hustler, right? When you're into hustling people for the tithe. Listen, you don't want tithing to end. Why? Because it puts you out of business. Race hustling, let's just use their term, racial warfare, right? If there's racial reconciliation, what happens? Sharpton is out of business. Sharpton can't collect another offering. Sharpton can't rally the troops to send a moment if there's racial reconciliation. That's why they don't want it to happen.
That's right.
Why?
Puts them out of a job.
That's it. That's it. So, listen, They will stare you in the face and tell you, we're going to solve this. No justice, no peace. No justice, you know the rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy's going to keep doing that until the day he dies. Because he's
right.
A con man. He's a con man.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Well, yeah. Well, you remember when we started this, we started with Mr. Manning, who was a Marxist, but he saw through the agenda, and he recognized that what he was involved in would ruin the United States, the country he lived in, you know, and he spoke out against it. And he mentioned these certain groups and what they were doing, like, you know, Sharpton type of people.
Right, right.
And how
right.
this then has infiltrated the black community, Marxism did back then. And he recognized that, and he fought against it. Very brave man. He extremely brave man. And
right.
Fascinating testimony he had. So that's where, you know, we kind of started with this movement and moved forward. And that was someone who understood it from the inside and the outside. He understood, you know, and he's warning against the same things that our brother here, these
right.
people are warning against. So anyway, I believe we stopped. Now tell me if I'm correct, because I believe we stopped somewhere around the 1 hour and 5 minutes. Because
yeah,
I wanted
one
you
hour,
to exegete
the scripture. Yeah, 106, yeah.
Okay, I wanted you to take time to exegete the scriptures, which you did a great
right.
job, and they all applied to this move. I think you'll see that when you go along, that, you know, I just proved that this movement is totally against the scriptures. Listen, there's hundreds of scriptures. That you could put up a defense, you know, against this movement, but we won't do that. We'll let them talk.
Right.
So
the,
if you want to play that.
And the 17 scriptures that they presented were just, you know, spot on. I mean,
yeah.
no one on the other side could argue against, right, what
yeah.
the scriptures, they, you know, the scriptures just made
yeah.
the case. If you let God's word
yep.
speak for itself, the other side doesn't have a case.
That's right. You
yeah.
know, especially the one in Exodus there about not following the crowd and doing wrong. You know?
Correct.
And if you
correct.
Remember when this started, you know, this uproar, we kept saying, don't get involved in these crowds, in these movements. We were saying that right in the beginning.
And listen.
And that's why. That's why. But go ahead.
The same thing. Listen, the same thing. It makes no difference about the skin color, right? Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, when Black Lives Matter came out and they were doing, we said, listen, don't get involved. Now, of course, it was
right.
black people or African-American people pushing that agenda. But if
mm-hmm.
you flip the coin, look at all the trouble that the people who followed Trump, you know, the Capitol riots in January 6th?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Now they're
yep.
all white. They're all white, basically. But you see, when you follow the crowd, when you follow the mayhem, when you follow the rioters, this
mm-hmm.
is what happens. You got to lawyer up. Now they got cameras. Now Nancy Pelosi saying you were after her. Ocasio-Cortez said she was scared for her life. She now has to get
mm-hmm.
a fear counseling. And guess what?
yeah.
You are now plea bargaining with the judge for time that you're going to do in jail. Over what? Is Trump in jail? Let me ask the listeners. Is Trump in jail? Is Trump in jail? No. The guy's out playing golf right now while you're staring at a 6x9 room.
That's right.
So that's why you don't get it. No matter what the color of the skin is, don't get involved.
Or the cause. Yeah, we
right.
said that right on both sides. We said either
right.
way, if you go this way, this is going to happen. You're going to be blamed for this. If you go this way, you'll be blamed for that. Right in the beginning, we started, you know, talking about that. And sure enough, that's what's happening. That's exactly
right.
What's happening. So, movements, stay away from them. Worldly movements, we need to stay away from that stuff. Look, there's enough things that are going to, and enough people that will come after us. We don't need to put ourselves out there. Because, you know, you don't want to be accused of the things that they want to accuse you of. We'll be falsely accused, no doubt, somewhere down the line. But you know what I'm saying? You don't want to get involved in that. And it, actually, you know from the scriptures, the Lord also says that. Do not get involved. Do not go with these crowds.
Right.
It's no good. So... okay, if you want to play that, we'll listen and then stop it as you like, anywhere you like. That's fine.
Yeah, we left off at the 1 minute, 5 minute, 48 second mark. So I want to take it back to 1 hour, 4 minutes. I'm going to take it back a little bit.
Okay.
An ecclesiastical body. Nevertheless, the principles that are intrinsic to those verses help us to see what true cosmic justice, if you will, looks like in a society. And it is on that note that I want to interject these words by John Calvin from his classic work, his Institutes of the Christian Religion. Calvin said this, quote, "In all laws, we must bear these two things in mind, what the law prescribes and how equitable it is. For it is on equity that the law's prescription rests. Since equity is natural, it is inevitably the same for all peoples. Thus, all the laws on earth, whatever their particular concern, should be about equity. As for the laws, regulations, or prescriptions, because they are conditioned by circumstances on which they partly depend, there is no reason why they should not be different, provided they are all directed to the goal of equity. Now, as God's law, which we call moral, essentially bears witness to the natural law and to conscience which our Lord has imprinted on the hearts of all men, that's Romans 1:19, there is no doubt, Calvin says, that the equity of which we now speak is wholly revealed in natural law. Now, listen how Calvin closes this out. Listen closely to this, listeners. That is why, Calvin says, equity, not outcomes, not equality, equity must be the goal. This, if I could pause here real quick, Omar, this is going back to that quote you read from Obama's Attorney General,
Eric Holder.
This point that Calvin is making is why Eric Holder was absolutely right in just saying what he said. Calvin said that is why equity must be the goal, the rule, and the finality of all laws. Unquote. That was John Calvin from his institute in the chapter on civil government. Calvin said that equity, not outcome, must be the goal, the rule, and finality of all laws. And by equity, Calvin is implying judgment without partiality of any kind. You see, that perspective of justice is not unique to Calvin, okay? That perspective is not unique to John Calvin. The first century Roman philosopher Lucius Aeneas Seneca said this in Latin. He said, "Auditor et altera pars," which translated to English means, "the other side shall be heard as well." The 19th century French poet and novelist Victor Hugo said this, quote, "Being good is easy. What is difficult is being just," unquote. The Greek philosopher Plato said, quote, "It is better, in fact, to be guilty of manslaughter than to be guilty of fraud about what is fair and just," unquote. The 5th century Greek playwright Euripides said this, quote, "In case of dissension, never dare to judge until you've heard the other side," unquote. Now, all those quotes align with what we find in Proverbs 18:13, which reads, "He who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him." In other words, in matters of dispute, we are to hear all sides without prejudice, partiality, and without regard to outcome. Mm-hmm. True cosmic justice, okay, true cosmic justice is justice that is completely impartial regardless of situations, circumstances, or outcomes. Justice is never defined or determined by feelings or aesthetics or on the basis of what someone thinks may or may not have occurred. Nor is justice defined or determined on the basis of a particular outcome or result that we would like to see come to pass, and which conversely, if that desire or result does not come to pass, we automatically deem it to be injustice.
Right.
And before I continue, Omaha, I want to say this. If the skin color of the victim of a perceived injustice is actually what triggers your supposed righteous indignation, you have a bigger problem than that perceived injustice, because what you just demonstrated is that your heart is even darker than the color of that person's skin. Okay? I want to repeat that because I know
that's
I got some.
Good. Come on.
We got some haters listening to us right now who are engulfed in embracing the BLM worldview. I'm saying this to you. If the skin color of the victim of a perceived injustice is actually what triggers your supposed righteous indignation, you, my brother or sister, have a bigger problem than that perceived injustice, because what you're demonstrating is that your heart is even darker than the color of that person's skin, okay? And you know, Omaha, I often think, whenever this matter of justice comes up, about how evangelical social justices, they love to cite their pet verse, man. Micah 6:8.
Right.
Micah 6:8. Oh, goodness. He has told you, oh, man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God? They love that verse, bro. They love it. And not only do they love that verse, they love to cherry pick two words from that verse.
Mm-hmm.
The words do justice. But in most cases, right, they never stop to ask or consider objectively what that word justice actually means.
Right.
They simply extrapolate those two words from that verse because it fits their own subjective construct of what justice is to them. Okay?
Right.
Justice doesn't mean equal opportunities, nor does it have anything to do with equal outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Justice has everything to do with equity, not equality. And equity means showing no partiality. That's exactly what Calvin was saying. Equity must be the goal of all laws. But in Micah 6:8, let me just exegete here for a second. In Micah 6:8, the word justice is the Hebrew noun mishpat. Mishpat. The word mishpat is spelled M-I-S-H-P-A-T. That word mishpat is a judicial term that has to do with rendering a decision or handing down a sentence in a legal proceeding. You see, the vast majority of evangelical social justicians that I encounter, who so often throw Micah 6:8 in my face, they do it in such a way as to put a period after the word justice, as if the only words in that entire passage were the words do justice. Right?
Right.
Now,
right.
Notwithstanding what the rest of Micah 6:8 says, to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God, what I've come to realize, Omaha, is that the overwhelming majority of evangelical social justicians who quote Micah 6:8 define justice solely in terms of certain outcomes that they want to see come to fruition. In other words, if a jury, for example, in a trial renders a verdict that is personally satisfactory and pleasing to them, then to them that's justice.
Right.
But when and if the opposite is the case, when the opposite happens, that's injustice.
Right, right, right.
So the Black Lives Matter, justice is holy, okay? It is completely a construct that is based solely on preferred outcomes, primarily for black people, okay? Now, what people need to understand is that, okay, it is precisely that kind of subjective paradigm of justice that gave birth to Black Lives Matter. That is why we've taken the time in this episode of the Just Thinking Podcast to exposit the motives, okay, to exposit the motives and the impetus for why Black Lives Matter was formed. Not just that they were formed, but why it was formed in the first place. I mean, why be indignant over the fact that Trayvon Martin's killer, George Zimmerman, was acquitted and yet not be indignant over the hundreds, if not thousands, of black people who kill one another every year in America in cities like Chicago, St. Louis, Cleveland, Washington, D.C., New Orleans, and Atlanta. Okay? I'll tell you why they're not indignant over those kind of killings. Because Black Lives Matter views justice through melanin-colored glasses. Okay?
Absolutely, yep.
Unlike what the scriptures declare, that justice should be a matter of objective evidence and the truthful and unbiased testimony of multiple witnesses and a judicial process that is impartial and that doesn't favor any of the parties involved,
mm-hmm.
for the founders of Black Lives Matter, the trial of George Zimmerman was about none of those things. The only thing that mattered to Black Lives Matter is that Trayvon Martin was black, period. Okay? Now, you'll no doubt recall, Omaha, that our Just Thinking podcast episode titled Whiteness, for our listeners who want to go back and listen to that episode, it's episode number 67. It's titled Whiteness.
Right.
In that episode, we made the point to define whiteness as anything that is not blackness. If you want to think,
let me just stop it here. I'm listening to him, and I know he's not ignoring this. I know he's too smart not to ignore this factor.
Mm-hmm.
But this is my take on it. This is my take. Where he puts the fact that they're defending black people, that's their main priority. They're going to defend black people. It's about Black Lives Matter. I believe the opposite is true. This is my take.
Mm-hmm.
My take on it is the shooting of black people is the excuse for them to exist. But why do they exist? They exist to turn it into a business.
Mm-hmm.
Plain another
point.
Way.
Good point.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
You have Franklin Graham, the son of Billy Graham. When he comes on to do his commercials now after Ida, this is Franklin Graham, and I represent Samaritan's Purse. Okay, now look at the name. Look at the name Samaritan's Purse. When you think of purse, you think of what? What comes to your mind as soon as you think about purse? Money.
Money. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's not called Samaritan. It's not called Samaritan Car. It's not called Samaritan Airplane. It's not called Samaritan Shoe. It's called Samaritan's Purse. Okay. So now, when you see that, what is he coming after? What does he want from you? Money.
Money.
See, the reason why Samaritan Purse exists is to collect money. The reason Black Lives Matter exists is to get money. See, I'm not denying, and I know they're not. I know these two brothers, they're too smart, they're too intelligent. And I know that they're not denying that there's a money component to this.
Right.
But I would put the money component first. Because for me, Black Lives Matter is simply a hustle.
Yep.
That's all it is. It's what prostitution is to the pimp. The pimp needs prostitutes. Why does the pimp need prostitutes? Does he just want everybody to have a good time? Is that the pimp's calling in life? I want everybody to be happy, so I'm gonna promote prostitution. No. The reason why the pimp is into prostitution and he puts the girls out on the street is because they turn tricks and they make money off of that, and he slaps them around at the end of the night and says, give me my money.
Yep.
Right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Is
no,
it about
you're
the
right.
money or
I
is
mean,
it not about the money?
No, it's actually the bottom line of all these things.
Right.
I mean, if you take it to its logical conclusion, that's exactly what it's about.
Correct.
People getting rich off that. Yeah.
People getting rich off of other people's miseries.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Think now about these vaccine, these people who made the vaccine, these companies. And I'm not knocking medicine. I'm not knocking the medical profession. I'm not knocking that. I'm not knocking scientists. So please don't misunderstand me, you listeners. But they said, okay, you take two shots and you're going to be fine. Now they're pumping. Now you're going to need regular booster shots. Okay? So now, mm-hmm. you see, what are they doing? They're making money. They're making money. That's what it is. It's about the money now.
Well, think about think about them creating, like, OxyContin. And the pharmaceutical companies are the ones that created that drug. Then they distributed it among Americans, and they had people addicted in record numbers, right? What was that about? Money, the bottom line.
Money.
I watched a whole movie on that, and it was all about the money.
The bottom line. The bottom line for all of these people. Look, you look at Afghanistan. Afghanistan, you know, the opium trade. That's
right.
How they
we
make
just
their
had
money.
Two.
Right?
Huh, that was,
You look at all these, they're all into a hustle. They all have a hustle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Follow the money, and you'll listen. They didn't do it. Did those people visit Trayvon Martin's mother and father and give them any cash? No.
Not at all. Sickening.
Where our brothers are, you know, and listen, they're doing a fantastic job. You know, they are right on. They're spot on. Yes, this is a Marxist group. Yes, this is, you know, they're liars, they're deceivers, because they tell you that they want to solve the black problem. But as they said, I mean, what are they doing for the blacks in Atlanta? What are they doing for the blacks in Washington, D.C., who are killing each other? What are they doing for the blacks in Chicago? If all those lives matter because they're black, why aren't they over there screaming against black-on-black crime? Well, there's no money in that.
Yes.
There's no money.
Exactly.
So that's why they
And
don't
I want to
do
go
it.
Back to something he said about judging there. You know, we read the scriptures about the right way to judge, you know, situations. And how many times have we heard in the church, we're not to judge the pastor, you know, don't touch God's anointed, you know, don't judge, you're not to judge or anything about that. But yet, those same people can judge, and this is in every church. I'm talking about the black church and the white church. They all do it when it comes to their pastor. But those same people, and I don't care what color they are, they will turn around and judge people because of the color of their skin. And they're telling you not to judge their pastor. So, you know, think about that. You can't say don't judge, you know, don't judge the pastor, don't judge this, and then turn around and judge people within society. You know, you just can't do that. So when he was talking about the judgment, I thought about that, because there's so many times the pastors are up against that when they're trying to tell the truth about a pastor. You're being told not to judge. But yet they're judging.
Look,
people are judging. I mean, this is all over the world. People are judging according to the color of the skin. They're judging. They have these preconceived ideas about someone. They're judging, you know. So, it's kind of crazy.
What Jesus is talking about in that passage, my dear brothers and sisters, he's talking about judging in a wicked way,
mm-hmm.
judging in a prejudicial way, right? Because think about it. I go to the supermarket, and my wife says, we need lemons. Okay, so I walk over to the lemon stand, and she says, what are you doing there so long? I says, I'm looking at because I pick each lemon up, I inspect it. And what am I doing? I'm judging because I don't want to buy a rotten lemon. When she says, we need potatoes, what do? I go to where they have the 5-pound bag of potatoes, and I look at every potato through the plastic. Why? Because my family has come home from the supermarket, and there's been a bad stinking potato in the bag.
Right. You have to judge every day.
Right. I'm judging every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm making assess. To judge is to make an assessment. Now, you from a wicked heart can make wicked assessments, or you from a righteous heart can make righteous assessments. But we have to judge every day. You buy a shampoo, and you saw it in a store, you read the advertising on the bottle. Okay, this sounds good. Then you bring it home and you squirt it on your head and you wash your hair and makes your hair all greasy. Oh, I'm not buying that shampoo. Mm-hmm. This is awful. You just judged.
Yeah.
You just judged, right? You we're constantly making assessments. You just went on vacation.
Yeah.
If I was to say to you, Sister Marie, you went on vacation, what places would you recommend? I'm asking you for your judgment. Why? Because I,
yeah,
too want to have a good time. I don't want to go to a flop house of a hotel where there's bed bugs.
Right.
Right? So if you were there,
right,
and you have places you can recommend, we do this every day.
Yeah.
Now, in the church,
we have the wicked
judging the righteous.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, we know that that judgment is not going to be any good. And so we're supposed to always judge from a pure heart and from pure motives. But we have to judge.
Right.
You have to judge.
Exactly.
Listen, if you're walking down the stairs and you misjudge a step walking down the stairs, you know what's going to happen? You're going to come tumbling down.
That's right. That's exactly.
You're always judging where you're going to put your feet. This is jackass talk when people say, oh, don't judge. What? What world do you live in where you don't judge? What world? Please.
There is none.
This is crazy.
Because you have to make it every minute of every day. You're
right.
Making a judgment on things. I mean, you know, so, yeah, that's just
you're
to
driving,
shut people down. That's all.
Yeah, you're driving. You gotta say, wait a minute. Do I put the brakes on now? You can't put the brakes on when you already hit someone. It's too late for the brakes. You misjudged. We're always judging. Always. Always.
Yep.
All right, let's go back to our precious brothers here.
Okay.
Definition of what whiteness is, that's it. Whiteness is anything that is not blackness. That is fundamentally what whiteness is. Now, I mention that because although George Zimmerman is not a white man in terms of his ethnicity, for all intents and purposes, Zimmerman may as well have been a white man as far as Black Lives Matter is concerned and those who support that organization. Now, I say that because the truth is, had Trayvon Martin been killed by a black man, and had that black man subsequently been acquitted in a court of law, you and I would not be having this conversation today, Omaha, because the founders of Black Lives Matter would not have cared enough to be so indignant as to launch such an organization in the first place.
Right, right.
In fact, the truth is, had Trayvon Martin, who was black, been killed by a black person, we wouldn't even know Trayvon Martin's name.
Absolutely.
What you got, man?
Absolutely, man. I love what you did, love what you walked us through. As a result, I want to go back and reiterate the point that you're making about the fact that if Trayvon Martin had been murdered by someone who was black, we would not know his name. We've all heard the names George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and the like, but few of us know the names of blacks killed by other blacks. And there's a reason for that, and that's because blacks killed by other blacks don't provide the appropriate emotional response necessary for Black Lives Matter advocates to promote their chaos.
Yep.
The truth is, and I'll say it again, black lives do not matter to Black Lives Matter. Let me go back and say this. The Bureau of Justice Statistics reported from 1980 to 2008 that 93% of black murders were committed by blacks. In 2012, that figure dropped to 91%. So 91% of black murders were committed by other blacks. Now, this fact is usually dismissed by those who claim ethnic groups murder those within their own ethnic group. Of interest regarding the number that 91% of blacks murder other blacks is that black men between the ages of 14 and 24 actually suffer disproportionately from murder in the black community. This single group actually represents only 1% of the population, but they suffer from highly disproportionate risk. Now, if there's any single group most vulnerable to death at the hands of a murderer, it's a black male between the ages of 14 to 24. Now, here's a point that you alluded to earlier. May 29th to May 31st in 2020, it was actually the deadliest weekend in Chicago's 60-year history. There were 18 murders in 24 hours with an additional 48 people that were shot and wounded during that same time. I thought to take a moment to mention a few of the names that you will never hear of because of the fact that they don't fit the narrative that creates the systemic chaos intended by Black Lives mm-hmm. Matter. Now, yep. The following is an excerpt I've taken from the Chicago Tribune. So I went to the Chicago area and got this information from the Chicago Tribune. But this is only a handful of the lives that were lost the weekend of May 29th through 31st. Lives like Angelo Bronson. She was standing at Inglewood's 6800 block of South Laughlin on May 31st when someone fired shots from a passing car, striking him, in the chest. Now, this 36-year-old father of two, he had two young children, was dead less than an hour later. Now, Bronson had lived in Washington, D.C. area for years where he worked at installing solar panels and was remembered by friends as hardworking, humble, and quick to laugh. He had come home for the weekend to visit his family who lived in the neighborhood, which he did frequently. How about the name John Tiggs? John Tiggs was 32. He was walking into a Metro at the 8100 block of Halsted on May 31st. He stopped there to pay his bills. That's at least what the family said, when shots were fired inside of a store amid widespread looting. Tiggs, his family described him as a devoted father of three young children. He was struck in the abdomen and died. A 15-year-old boy was also injured. On May 31st, the victims included two 18-year-old women. Both of them were students. Lazara Daniels, a student at DRW College Prep in Lawndale, was found shot by officers officers found her. She was already shot at 10:51 p.m. on that Sunday. The principal, Tony Sutton, called Daniels, her death, an incalculable loss for her family and one that whose pain will last an incredibly long time. Kishana Bolton was enrolled at Western Illinois University, where she was studying law enforcement and justice, and she hoped to become a correctional officer. Police said Bolton was killed that Sunday afternoon when she was shot during an argument in Inglewood, where she grew up. Now, all of these are lies, and I only scratched the surface of what was actually in the article. All of these were lies that will never be mentioned by those advocating that black lives matter.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Yep. Because they don't see that these stories, these lies, don't provide the fuel for the emotional and systemic chaos that is necessary to fuel Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, in my estimation, should change their name to Black Lives Matter. Black.
Change it to Green Money Matters.
Matters, yes. Yeah.
Green Money Matters. That's what it's
yep.
about, green money.
Yep.
Green
yep.
money. Any comments
but, you know,
on what these brothers said?
I do. Because I know of a story here. I know of a story in Flint. Now, when all this chaos was happening around the United States, there was a black man in Flint who, and I've mentioned this story because I was outraged. He was a manager of a dollar store in Flint, Michigan. And the mask mandates were going on. And a black woman come in with her daughter, and he asked her, as the policy was, to put on a mask. That was his job. And he asked her in a nice way, could she do that? She left the store, got her husband, her boyfriend, and her brother, and came back and shot him in the head.
Oh, my goodness.
Just because he did that. And let me tell you something. Here's the outrage. No one mentioned it. There was a little article in the news about it. Our news, of course, you know, mentioned it. But there was nothing. And I watched the wife and the children of this man that was shot in the head by two black men who was black himself. And I watched that family. They had no support. No one stood with them. They were, I mean, devastated. And the only people that stood with them was, you know, around them, the news people or whatever, because it did make their local news. But I didn't see anyone step in. So she had to grieve alone. This woman lost her husband.
My goodness.
These kids lost her father. And I'm saying, well, where is Black Lives Matter in this? It didn't matter that she had to struggle alone. And you know what? He was just doing his job. He was just doing his job. And he got killed for it. Because why? Because he asked her to do something that she was – and he asked her in a nice way. Wonderful man. From all reports, wonderful man. But no one stepped in. You know,
sad.
It's amazing because even the white community was outraged about it.
Right.
Isn't that terrible?
The
white community was outraged.
Right. And what causes us to be in outrage is justice, equity.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Which means that everybody ought to be treated equally. Equally.
Yes.
Not like animals, equally, like human beings.
Yep, that's right. And I can tell you, like from Detroit, most of the crimes committed in West Detroit, talking about West Detroit, not East Detroit, are black-on-black crimes.
Sad.
And here's the sad part. It's children. It's innocent children getting killed. They're shot and killed all the time in drive-bys. And this is west part of Detroit. And you can look up the stats. That's exactly what's going on there. And the community, again, is outraged about it.
Right.
Only the community. And these are black-on-black crime. And the witnesses within the community refuse, against these scriptures that we read last week, to stand up and identify the perpetrator. Now, that's out of fear, and yet God said, don't do the right thing. Don't fear the man. You do what's right in it, you know. And if you stand up in defense of the victim, you're told that you do not understand the community. Well, I understand that there's a child dead. I understand that somebody's baby's dead, you know, and somebody's walking out there, and they're going to do it to another child. They're going to kill another child. That's what I understand. And I understand that if he's not taken off the street, it's just going to happen again and again. Women are going to lose their babies, their children. I get that. And I get outraged about that because I understand the fear of people not speaking up. But at the same time, you have to do what's right. You have to stop this. That's the only way it's going to stop. And that would support what the Bible tells us to do.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A soul is a soul. A person is a person. They should all be treated equally. We should
Absolutely.
Be outraged over the Holocaust in World War II. We said it'll never happen again. We should be against the Holocaust, the destruction of any people. The people over there in Afghanistan right now, where the Taliban is going from house to house and executing people.
Yes,
we should be outraged over that.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, because all lives matter. All lives.
Yep. Well, I can tell you that, you know, I mean, that outrageous meme when I see a woman on there who's crying her heart out, your heart, you can hardly take it. They're so upset. And yet that perpetrator's walking out there.
Yeah.
Innocent.
Sure.
We're talking about 2-year-olds, 3-year-old kids. Innocent children getting killed.
Chicago
yeah,
this weekend, a 4-year-old child. A 4-year-old child was gunned down in Chicago this weekend. Memorial Day weekend. It just happened. A 4-year-old child.
Yep.
Can you imagine that? It's heartbreaking.
As people, we need to stand up and quit fearing these perpetrators. And we need
right.
to say something. We need to quit, you know, don't fear the perpetrator, because I'm going to tell you, it's someone else's child. I could not look at a mother and know who did that.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And not say anything. Because that mother's grieving. It is horrendous what's going on. And
absolutely.
You know what? That's lawlessness. That's just lawlessness. That person
big
needs
time.
To be in court and needs to pay for that. Now, I'm not there to you know, be the judge or executioner. I'm not there for that. But I know that that life was just as important as any life is. And we, especially as mothers, need to stand up and say, enough is enough. These are our babies. You know? I mean, it makes me sick. It just makes me sick that these babies are getting killed for nothing because someone wants to take a gun and just shoot up homes because they think they were wrong over something, or they're revenge killing, or, you know, or
mm-hmm.
they're just shooting
yeah.
randomly, and I don't care. You know, if you see something, say something. That's all I got to say.
Absolutely. All right, here's more from our brothers.
Sorry, when it comes to kids.
Oh, no. There's no need to be sorry. No need. No.
Mm-mm. Whoa. Black what?
Black lives. L-I-E-S. Black lives matter. And again, the reason I say that, man, is because hands up, don't shoot was an absolute lie. But
true.
That's what they fueled their movement on. And those stories like that provide the appropriate fake narrative that moves people to march against systems targeted by BLM for upheaval. That's what I've got to say about that.
Excellent, bro. Excellent. You know, Omaha, in the What We Believe section of the Black Lives Matter website, the organization states this, quote, Black Lives Matter began as a call to action in response to state-sanctioned violence and anti-black racism. Our intention from the very beginning was to connect black people from all over the world. I almost laughed when I read this part. Our intention from the very beginning was to connect black people from all over the world who have a shared desire for justice. Ha, ha, ha. A shared desire for justice to act together in their communities. Yeah, right. The impetus for that commitment, I continue reading from the Black Lives Matter website in the section What We Believe. The impetus for that commitment was and still is the rampant and deliberate violence inflicted on us by the state, unquote. What I just read was verbatim from the Black Lives Matter website. Now, let's pause right there for a moment, Omaha. Black Lives Matter says its objectives are, quote, a shared desire for justice, unquote, for black people to, quote, act together in their communities, unquote, and, quote, the rampant and deliberate, against, quote, the rampant and deliberate violence inflicted on us by the state, unquote, us being black people.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, and to your earlier point when you gave those statistics, first of all, it's not, quote, the state, unquote, that's inflicting, quote, rampant and deliberate violence, unquote, in black communities in America. It's predominantly black people who are doing that to each other, okay?
Absolutely.
And you just gave some haunting statistics. that bear that out, Omaha. It's not the state that's doing that. It's black people who are doing that. Second, some of the most egregious occurrences of what is called, quote, racism, unquote, by black people in America today is a direct result of the intra-ethnic prejudice that is exhibited by black people toward other black people. Mm. Now, that's the kind of racism no one wants to talk about, okay? Some of the most egregious occurrences of racism in America is a direct result of intra-ethnic prejudice that is exhibited by black people toward other black people. It's like I've written about Omaha and said countless times, the very idea of quote-unquote black community is a myth. It's a myth. It's a mirage. It's a phantasm. Black community does not exist. Listen, never think, okay, never think that because black people share a common shade of melanin that they also share a common worldview. Never think that. Never think that. For example, though many evangelical social justicians who support Black Lives Matter are no doubt familiar with the names Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, I seriously doubt that many of them will be familiar with the names Sequoia Turner and Julian Conley. Sequoia Turner is the name of an eight-year-old black girl who was shot and killed on July 4th, 2020 in Southeast Atlanta, my hometown. Julian Conley is the name of the 19-year-old black man who has been arrested and charged with Sequoia Turner's murder. Now, is Black Lives Matter expressing how, quote-unquote, enraged they are over Sequoia Turner's killing? No, they're not. Why? Because their indignation is selective. It's that way with many black Americans today. Their supposed outrage and anger over the violence that happens to black people is predicated upon the skin color of both the perpetrator and the victim. You see, Omaha is different when both the victim and the perpetrator are black. There are no outcries for justice from Black Lives Matter in those situations. Oh, no. In fact, in many situations in black communities and neighborhoods in America, when a black person is killed by another black person, the individuals who live in those communities will often refuse to cooperate with the police to bring the offender to justice.
That'll preach. That will preach right there.
Now, why is that? Well, that's because the offender is black. They do this out of some twisted and warped sense of ethnic tribalism that somehow deems it virtuous and beneficent to prevent a black offender from being arrested and facing the same judicial processes and consequences that they would want anyone else to face who was not black. That is an unarguable fact, okay? When the victim is black and the offender is anything other than black, particularly when the offender is someone who is in a position of authority, such as a police officer, only then does Black Lives Matter want to rise up and protest and remonstrate in the streets and demand, quote, justice, unquote. Why?
Right.
Okay, why is that? Because, as their own website states, Black Lives Matter is a political organization. And being a political organization, it is no different than any other political entity in that Black Lives Matter has an agenda that it is pursuing. And to the extent that certain acts of violence, such as those involving black victims and non-black perpetrators, Black Lives Matter will opportunistically take advantage of those acts of violence in order to propagate and advance their political agenda, which, by the way, is heavily influenced and guided by the ideology of Marxism. In fact, two of the three founding members of Black Lives Matter, Patrice Cullors and Alicia Garza, have acknowledged that they both are, quote, trained Marxists, unquote. Listen to the following from a New York Post article dated June 20th, 2020, titled, quote, Black Lives Matter co-founder describes herself as, quote, trained Marxist, unquote. I'm quoting from that New York Post article dated June 20th, 2020. Quote, Black Lives Matter co-founder Patrice Cullors said in a newly surfaced video from 2015 that she and her fellow organizers are, quote, trained Marxists, unquote, making clear that their movement's ideological foundation, according to a report, Cullors, 36, was the protege of Eric Mann. That's Eric, M-A-N-N, Eric Mann, former agitator of the Weather Underground domestic terror organization, and spent years absorbing the Marxist-Leninist ideology that shaped her worldview. Quote, quoting Colores here, "The first thing I think is that we actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia," referring to Alicia Garza, "in particular, are trained organizers," unquote, she said, referring to BLM co-founder Alicia Garza. Quote, "We are trained Marxists. We are super versed on sort of ideological theories. And I think that what we really try to do is build a movement that could be utilized by many, many black folk," Colores added in the interview with Jarrett Ball of the Real News Network. While promoting her book titled When They Call You a Terrorist, A Black Lives Matter Memoir in 2018, Colores described her introduction to and support for Marxist ideology. She described to Democracy Now!, a cable TV political news program whose content leans heavily to the left, how she became a trained organizer with the Labor Community Strategy Center, which she called her first political home, under the mentorship of Mann, that is Eric Mann, its director. The center, which described its philosophy as, quote, "an urban experiment," unquote, uses grassroots organization to, quote, "focus on black and Latino communities with deep and historical ties to the long history of anti-colonial, anti-imperialist, pro-communist resistance to the U.S. empire," unquote, according to the outlet. It also expresses its appreciation for the work of the U.S. Communist Party, quote, "especially black communists," unquote, as well as its support for, quote, "the great work of the Black Panther Party, the American Indian Movement, Young Lords, Brown Berets, and the great revolutionary rainbow experiments of the 1970s, unquote. In 1968, Mann, that is Eric Mann, was a coordinator for Students for a Democratic Society, from which a more radical wing, the Weather Underground, was splintered the following year. It was led, it being the Weather Underground, was led by Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, who called for, quote, "direct action over civil disobedience," seeking the overthrow of the U.S. government. In 1969, the FBI classified the group as a domestic terror organization. Mann was eventually charged with assault and battery, disturbing the peace, damaging property, defacing a building, and disturbing a public assembly, for which he spent 18 months behind bars, unquote. Again, that was from a New York Post article from June 20th, 2020. Now, given that two-thirds of the founders of Black Lives Matter have confessed to holding to a Marxist ideology and worldview, I want to share some information with our listeners about the man that Patrice Colores and Alicia Garza seem to esteem so highly, namely the man known as Karl Heinrich Marx.
All right, so let's stop it there before he gets into what they think of Marx. Do you have any comments?
Go ahead. Do you have any?
No. They're just, you know, it's like an onion. They're taking the layers. They're taking the peels off the onion.
Right.
And, you know, and the other thing is that they're doing, they're letting these people speak for themselves. They're quoting them in articles and interviews,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're the ones
yeah.
declaring, you know, it's like me when I say Paula White's a false teacher. Well, that's
right.
my opinion because Paula White denies she's a false teacher. These people don't deny that they're Marxists. They tell you they're Marxists.
That's right.
So that tells you everything. They embrace that label. They hold it as a badge of honor. So
well,
I've been calling Paula White.
I have a question, though.
Go ahead.
I have a question. Do you think that BLM is like Antifa in disguise? You think that? Could they be Antifa
I'm pretty sure.
in disguise?
Look, I think that when you declare that you are an adherent to Marxist doctrine, I think at that point you took off the disguise.
Right.
I mean, when you have the founding leader say, "Hey, I'm a Marxist," I think the disguise is off.
Right.
Now, if they kept acting the way they did and didn't declare they were Marxists, then I say, okay, they're like Antifa, they're disguised, but they're a Marxist group in disguise. They already took off their Halloween outfit and are telling you, this is me. You know, I'm the boogeyman. So,
well, because, you know, a lot of people would have said, I'd never join Antifa. However, they were able, BLM was able to get a large population of the white community on board with BLM by just a different name, you know, and they were able to get society in general on board with this by saying they're BLM, where if they came out and said, okay, we're, you know, we're just like Antifa, no one would have joined, you know, not too many people would have joined that group. So I just wondered.
Right. Yeah.
Because what this organization is going to do is just get black lives killed. You know?
Yeah.
More black lives.
Or get you on the government watch list, right?
Exactly.
Let's say you do a radio interview and you say, you know, I'm an avowed Marxist. Okay, guess who's writing that down? The FBI, the CIA.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
The local police department. They're all writing that down because you put yourself on a terrorist list by saying you're a Marxist.
Right.
That's it.
Crazy. Okay.
We're probably known to us as Karl Marx. In the book titled Revolutions and Worldview, Understanding the Flow of Western Thought, author W. Andrew Hofacker writes this about Marx. Quote, Karl Marx believed abstract, transcendental, metaphysical terms did not describe human nature. Humans are merely the matter from which they have come. Nothing exists over and above the material world. Marx was pessimistic about human nature. Apart from social pressures asserted by the community for its good, humans are intrinsically selfish. Social ties exist before individual moral standards and are the only ground for those standards. The collective good of the society precedes, Marx says, the collective good of the society precedes any moral principles that elevate the dignity of the individual. Now, that is antithetical to what is taught in Genesis 1:27 about the Imago Dei. Continuing here. According to Marx, the origin of religion reveals it to be a determined oppressor. Did you get that? Marx believed that the origin of religion reveals it to be a determined oppressor. People sought meaning beyond themselves and created a god in their own image. Dominant economic forces manipulated this fantasy figure to justify their system. Marx disparaged religion, believing it justified oppressive economic conditions. Religion was idolatrous. It created a god who served the economic interests of masters. Workers held on to religion to protect themselves against the inhumanity of the industrial workplace. Religion gave them hope in a hopeless world. Owners used religion to submit their oppressive existence. Marx did not take individual evil seriously. He hoped systemic, economic, and political changes would eradicate it. Contrary to Marx's assumptions, communities can be just as oppressive as individuals can. Marx did not see that religious confession could function as a prophetic voice against human injustice, precisely because it offers a word from, quote, outside, unquote. The transcendent voice of God's word judges all people. is precisely the tool Marx yearned for with which to criticize culture. One only need to read the Old Testament prophets to see this. Now listen to this. Listen how this quote is closed out. Without a transcendent word, that is, without a word that is outside of us, the only judge of human actions can be human words, which are always corruptible individually and corporately. Now let me pause right there. I want to go into another quote, but let me pause there for a second. I want to reiterate something here. Harfecker says this. He says that Marx did not take individual evil seriously, and that he hoped systemic economic and political changes would eradicate evil. Now, what does that sound like, Omaha? I'm going off my notes here for a second. But what does that sound like? That sounds just like the social gospel. It sounds just like the social gospel.
Right.
It sounds just like the social gospel that many evangelicals and professing Christians are propagating right now, hoping that systemic economic and political changes will eradicate evil. Those are the folks who you hear say all the time, well, it's not enough to just preach the gospel. That's those folks. That's those folks right there who believe just like Karl Marx. They believe just like Marx, and that they believe that changing systems, economic and political systems, will eradicate evil. That's the social gospel. It's preaching the same thing that Karl Marx believed without calling it Marxism.
And this is why any gospel that doesn't come from God and doesn't have Christ at the center will mm-hmm. never bring the change that humanity so desperately needs.
That's right.
Right? Right? That's it. Listen. Humanity has tried everything. All these thousands of years later, we've tried everything. And what are we at? We're at each other's throats.
Yeah.
China can't wait to do away with America. America can't wait to do with China. The Japanese are, they hate China. The Russians hate America. Listen, everybody's at each other's throat. That's just humanity. After all of these PhDs, we have so many.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the universities that are just knocking people with PhDs, PhD this, PhD
that's
that.
Right.
And we're so messed up.
Yes. Well, the trouble is there always comes a point where men, we want to become God, right?
Right.
The ultimate thing. That's what happened. And it failed. And then it starts again, and it fails. History repeats itself. Men setting themselves up as God. And I think it will go like that until we get the ultimate, the Antichrist.
Right.
Who
That's it.
Will just set himself up. But see, he has to have, this is why this global thing of the social justice, this is global. This is not just in the American church. This is going on globally. This is why it's important. All this is important because things now are on a global scale. They were on, a different scale at one time, but now it's globally. Now we're talking, end
right.
time stuff when you start talking
sure.
global. So
right.
when you have the world on board. So this is why it's important to deal with these things. And, it's just man repeatedly setting themselves up, each kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
And Marx's kingdom has been everywhere, and it's falling apart. It's falling apart. And wherever they prop it up, it's going to fall apart again. It makes no difference. Right? Okay.
All right, another quote. In an article titled Karl Marx versus Charles Spurgeon, An Epic Struggle for the Souls of Men in 19th Century London, writer Larry Alex Taunton, last name is spelled T-A-U-N-T-O-N, Larry Alex Taunton writes this, quote, Although he, that is Karl Marx, fashioned himself as a scholar, he was more of a dilettante, dabbler in scholarly activity. A scholar began, and this is very important, listeners, that you catch this. A scholar, Taunton writes, a scholar begins with a tentative thesis and allows the facts to dictate his conclusion. He is, in other words, committed to the truth. In sharp contrast to this methodology, Marx, like, quote, woke media and, quote, woke policies and, quote, woke, unquote, academia, began with a conclusion and worked back from it. Facts be damned. Now, let me pause right here. What Taunton is saying here, he's describing the narrative that underscores what you're hearing repeatedly and almost ubiquitously mentioned, especially with certain pockets of the evangelical church today, accusing all white people of being racist and supremacist. White supremacist. This is exactly what you're hearing. They're working from a conclusion. They're drawing a conclusion and working back, as opposed to a scholar, according to Taunton, who begins with a thesis and allows the facts to dictate the conclusion. What you're hearing in woke theology and woke evangelicalism is social justicians will throw a conclusion out there as if it's the facts.
Right.
Taunton continues. He quotes Karl Marx. Communism, quote, I'm quoting here, communism abolishes eternal truths, he, Karl Marx, declared openly in the Communist Manifesto from 1848. Quoting Marx, it abolishes all religion, it being communism. Communism abolishes all religion and all morality instead of constituting them on a new basis, unquote. Taunton continues in his article. In another passage of that dangerous little book being the Communist Manifesto, Marx says this, quote, abolish the family. Let me pause here for a second. Those words, Omaha, given the research that you and I both have done, should resonate with you from what we've read on the Black Lives Matter website.
Right.
Black Lives Matter on their own website say that they want to get rid of the patriarchal family that is led by the father, but is led by a man. This is exactly what Marx wanted to do. Marx wants to abolish the family. Marx says this here in the Communist Manifesto, abolish the family. The bourgeois family will vanish as a matter of course when its complement vanishes, and both will vanish with the vanishing of capital. The bourgeois claptrap about the family and education, about the hallowed correlation of parent and child, becomes all the more disgusting the more by the action of modern industry, all family ties among the proletarians are torn asunder and their children transformed into simple articles of commerce and instruments of labor, unquote. That was Karl Marx himself from the Communist Manifesto. I'm continuing to read from Larry Taunton's article. Much as Mein Kampf from 1925 will be a bald statement of Hitler's intentions should he ever attain power, the Communist Manifesto is likewise clear in stating the objectives of communists, i.e. socialists, should they ever attain power. No one could justly say he was not forewarned. And parenthetically, Taunton says this as he closes out this portion of the article. Listen to this closely. So it is, too, with Black Lives Matter, where one finds all of this, that is, all of Marx's ideology, all of this restated in oblique terms on their website, unquote. So what Black Lives Matter has done on their website, Taunton is saying here, is replicate the worldview of Karl Marx, okay, obliquely, though, obliquely, so that it's not so conspicuous, so it's not so evident. But when you read between the lines of what's on the Black Lives Matter website and then what's on their printed in their manifesto, it's clear. Taunton is exactly right. All of this that Karl Marx believed is restated on the Black Lives Matter website, but in oblique terms. In his book, Heaven on Earth, The Rise, Fall, and Afterlife.
Any comment to that point? Hello? Did you put yourself on mute? Okay. While Sister Marie gets back, let me just read something here. This is in the book. This is in the book, 1001 Things You Always Wanted to Know About Angels, Demons, and the Afterlife. Hello, my sister.
Hello.
Are you back? Yeah, okay. I'm
yeah,
glad
the
I got
phone
back.
Call dropped last time,
okay.
And I was trying to get back on, and it wouldn't let me, so I called back in. I had a statement about
yeah.
Marx here. I was saying Marx was a Jewish atheist, and he hated God. And if you listen to what was said about what he hopes to accomplish, that's being done today, about the dismantling of family, you know, and preparing the kids, you know, they're just a workforce.
Right,
that's
right.
All, you know, this is all the woke movement. This is what's going on through the woke movement. So that's a part of the BLM. It's a part of the
right
whole agenda, and we see them trying to do that today. So,
right.
I mean,
now,
when he read it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're always quoting Solomon, where Solomon says there's nothing new under the sun. So
correct.
I have here in front of me a book called 1001 Things You Always Wanted to Know About Angels, Demons, and the Afterlife, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so on page 460, there's an article on liberation theology. Let me just read that real quick.
Okay.
Why seek heaven when you can transform earth into a utopia? That question was the driving force behind liberation theology, a theological movement
right.
popular in the 1960s and 70s. As everyone now admits, it was more influenced by Marxism than by the Bible.
Yes.
Okay? So again...
Yep.
Black Lives Matter is just liberation theology with a, you know, with a different jacket on. That's all it is. Okay.
Exactly.
Let me continue reading. Okay, so why seek heaven when you can transform earth into a utopia? The question was the driving force behind liberation theology, a theological movement popular in the 1960s and 70s. As everyone now admits, because they didn't admit it before, it was more influenced by Marxism than by the Bible. Liberation theologians played down the New Testament teachings on mercy, kindness,
mm-hmm.
and forgiving one's enemies, and instead focused on political liberation, freeing people from oppression as God did the Israelites in Exodus. Critics of liberation theology pointed out that Exodus shows God as the liberator and that the children of Israel themselves did no violence to secure their liberation, while liberation theologians condone violence, like Black Lives, right? Doesn't Black Lives Matter say, you know, let's just burn the place down?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they teach. Okay. So it goes on to say, as he's winding down the article, as Marxism declined in popularity, so has liberation theology. Its influence lingers among liberals who prefer utopia to heaven. So now,
wow.
Of course, this was written, this book came out in the year 2000. So 21 years later, he wrote, okay, liberation theology is under, you know, it's going out of style. But as you can see, they always revive it. They're always reviving it
right.
in some form or fashion. And Black Lives Matter
yep.
is the current incarnation of liberation theology, which got all of its points
right.
from whom? Karl Marx.
Right. And woke theology believes humans can eradicate evil.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Right.
That's the social justice gospel right there.
Yeah. And is that possible? No.
No.
It's not possible. None of this is possible without God, without Christ.
That's right.
It's not possible. Why? Because we need a supernatural act of God to change people's hearts. The new birth changes people's hearts. Not you know, schooling, not indoctrination. Listen, there's a lot of, the Pharisees were indoctrinated. The Sadducees were indoctrinated. But they were wicked. Indoctrination without the new birth, without a new heart, is no good. You need the new heart first so that you can love your fellow man and forgive your enemies and pray for your enemies. You need the new birth first. Without the new birth, we're not achieving anything. We're just not.
That's right. That's amazing. Woke Christianity, the social justice gospel, black liberation theology, BLM, is all Marxism. That's all it is.
All of it.
Yep.
And this stuff has been trying to make its way into the church since the 1960s. Right?
Yeah.
That's what it's been doing.
Yep.
And again, when it first showed up, they didn't want to admit that it was Marxism covered up in some twisted Bible verses. Because that's all they did.
Because no one would accept that.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Yeah. Here's more.
Author Joshua Moravchik writes this, quote, although Karl Marx lived until 1883, he was born in 1818. Although Karl Marx lived until 1883, much of his final 11 years was spent in search for cures for his numerous ailments. When he was interred at London's Highgate Cemetery, fewer than 20 mourners attended. The loneliness of his death and the failure of his life both owed much to a central paradox about Marx. He thought of himself as a man who devoted himself to, quote, working for humanity, unquote, as he liked to phrase it, comparing himself invidiously with, quote, so-called practical men who busied themselves with career and family. But whatever his devotion to humanity in general, to the concrete individuals with whom he came in contact, from childhood until old age, Marx was never kind and often cruel, unquote. In the book, A History of Western Philosophy and Theology, theologian John Frame writes this, quote, people have often asked whether violent revolution is really necessary. Peaceful social movements, particularly religions, have brought great improvements in the condition of the poor. Christians were in the vanguard in abolishing the slave trade and slavery itself, also in the care of orphans and widows, improving education, encouraging science and art. But Marx thought that religions and liberal social movements should not be encouraged. In his view, they were counterproductive because they waste precious time and energy and do not get to the root of the problem. Listen to this from John Frame about Marx. The real problems, Marx and later Marxists argued, are structural. What does that sound like, Omaha? Is that all you're hearing today, right? That's all you're hearing within social, from evangelical social justicians and secular social justicians alike. No, the problem is structural. The problem's not spiritual. The root of the problem is structural.
Right.
I'm continuing to quote John Frame here. They cannot be solved. So Marxists say that the real problems are structural. They cannot be solved until there is radical change in the very nature of society. This is what people do not understand about Black Lives Matter. It's not some just innocuous hashtag. Black Lives Matter wants to, as Barack Obama said when he was running for president, Black Lives Matter wants to fundamentally transform society. If people who are listening to me right now would take the time to go and read from the Black Lives Matter's website and read their manifesto titled A Vision for Black Lives, Policy Demands for Black Power, Freedom, and Justice, they would see this for themselves. Okay? Frame says that Marxists argue that the real problems are structural. That is a code word that you always hear all the time. That's code for changing, as Frame says, the very nature of society. Frame continues talking about Marx. He says the means of production, this is Karl Marx, Karl Marx believed that the means of production must be taken from the rich capitalists and given to the representatives of the poor. Don't miss that, listeners. This is Black Lives Matter. Frame says that Marx believed that production must be taken from the rich capital. This is the same thing that Black Lives Matter believes if you just read them. This is the exact same thing they endorse. Production must be taken from the rich capitalists and given not to the poor. To your point earlier, Omaha, where's all this money going?
Right.
Where's all this money going? They don't believe in giving the money to the poor, but to the representatives of the poor. The representatives of the poor. That's why with any socialist society, there's always this little pocket, there's always little clique who get extremely wealthy when the masses remain extremely poor, extremely impoverished. Frame continues. He says, so Marx described religion, particularly Christianity, as a, quote, opiate, unquote, a kind of drug given to the poor by the rich to persuade them that revolution is not needed. Until the influence of the opiate, they come to think that they will get their due reward through normal social change and eventually a reward, quote, in the sky by and by, unquote.
You see, going back again to why these organizations exist, it's the leaders who get rich.
Mm-hmm.
It's the leaders, it's, you know, again, you look at these people on TV, air quotes, Christian television, and they're saying, look, we need to help the people who need water. We're doing water pumps, you know, in some foreign third world nation, and we want to provide these people with clean water. And you send them $500 or you send them $1,000. Who knows if your money is going for that cause? Because they have a disclaimer on the bottom of the page that the ministry has the right to use that money. Not while they're running this commercial and telling you what mm-hmm. they need the money for and how they need you to send it now because they need to provide water. On the bottom of the screen, there's a disclaimer. The monies that you send in can be used by this organization to do whatever it needs to at the time the money's given. So they're telling you one
right.
thing, but they have the power to use it any way they want to. And who knows if they're using it to fix up the pastor's house and, you know, put in a new swimming pool for him, right? Because who questions the bishop? The bishop is the man of God, and we've got to take care of the man of God. See, so again, these people know how to play the game. They
mm-hmm.
do it in the church world. They do it in the political world. Look at all of these congressmen and senators who enter into office poor. They're poor. By the time they leave, they're multimillionaires. Multi-millionaires.
Yeah.
How did that happen? How did you enter in poor and enter, you know, now you got $70 million after you left office. How did that happen? It's not through your Senate salary or your salary as a congressman. You guys get paid
right.
peanuts. How did it happen?
Right.
Oh, I tell you how it happened. Under the table money.
That's
see?
Right. Yep. Yep.
So
you know, it's already in the government. We know that because the leaders there appear to promote this stuff themselves. So we know it's at a government level in our country. They're
sure.
promoting this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, here's more.
So Marxists regard religion as a barrier to revolution. Listen to this, people. Please get this. So Marxists regard religion as a barrier to revolution and therefore a barrier to truly radical social change. Marx erred in his judgment. Marx erred in his judgment in that his dialectic did not end with the Communist Revolution. Ironically, indeed, the dialectic continued in a way that paralleled Marx's analysis of past relations of production. For the revolution brought about a new arrangement of haves and have-nots. The haves were the government and their political allies, and the have-nots were everybody else,
yeah.
Unquote. Yeah. That was from John Frame's book. I'm sorry, that was Joshua Moravchik, rather. That was Joshua Moravchik from his book, Heaven on Earth, The Rise, Fall, and Afterlife of Socialism. Now, why is all this about Karl Marx important to this conversation, Omar? It's important because Christians are being duped into thinking that Black Lives Matter is an organization whose mission is founded upon some innocuous and inoffensive hashtag, when in reality, it is an organization whose agenda is driven by an ungodly worldview and ideology that has literally destroyed millions of lives over the course of human history. And the truth about Black Lives Matter needs to be told. It needs to be told. That is why all of this about Karl Marx is relevant to the conversation we're having about Black Lives Matter. Thoughts, man?
Man, I appreciate the section that you just walked through, and I'm going to encourage our listeners to go back with pen in hand. In fact, I really want them to go back to when you began citing all of those verses of Scripture. I mean, because that in and of itself just underscores the fact that we do not serve a God who is partial, right? We serve an impartial God, a God who's sovereign over all, who stands upon justice, is a just God, a God whose wrath is bared out with equity between the poor and the rich, right? All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So all those things need to be examined and looked at. And I think this section that you just walked through really makes our case. I mean, it really makes the case that this is, to the point you just made, this is not this some innocuous hashtag that everybody can embrace as a virtue signal about the importance of black lives. This is mm-hmm. about the overthrow of an entire system. It's about the overthrow of complete structures. And again, I think you eloquently and effectively just made that case. Well, this section of commentary, again, is important as important as it is to worldview. It's really important for us to get and understand. One of the questions that have got to be asked when we think about this worldview that seems to be permeating every facet of our culture, we have to ask a question. And the question is this: how is it possible in a culture founded on a Judeo-Christian worldview and capitalist principles, how does that culture find itself susceptible to such an ungodly, unbiblical, antithetical ideology?
Mm-hmm.
How is that even possible? The answer to this very question is the reason why we do the podcast, is it not, brother? I mean, if we don't teach the next generation the truth of Scripture, we lose that generation.
Mm-hmm.
After more than 100 episodes of the Just Thinking podcast, I can recall our constant reminder that you've given numbers of times on our podcast that you and I have talked about in numerous interviews. We said that we want to unpack what Scripture means, but more importantly, we want to unpack what it means by what it says, right? We want to understand
Amen.
What Scripture says,
yep.
but we also want to unpack what it means by what it says.
Amen.
And it's at this point in a culture that has grown fond of exchanging in-depth expositional preaching for topical TED Talks, right? That's kind of what we've done. We've exchanged in-depth
yes.
expositional preaching for topical TED Talks. We have far too many believers who have grown accustomed to pragmatism rather than the power of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Add to this fact that the secular educational system really is in cahoots with the ideas surrounding Marxism. This the vast majority of believers and unbelievers alike have found themselves being educated in a secular public school system. It's built upon historic revisionism at its core. This revisionism sees Christianity as the white man's religion that is used only to enslave blacks and put them into bondage. I love what you quoted from what Frame said earlier. He said, and I quote, "Christians were in the vanguard of abolishing the slave trade and slavery itself, also in the care of orphans and widows, improving education, encouraging science and art," end quote. When I thought about that, I reflected upon the book by Thomas Sowell, which we've quoted a number of times in this particular episode. But in his book, Black Rednecks, White Liberals, he wrote this, and I quote, what was peculiar about the West was not that it participated in the worldwide evil of slavery, but that it later abolished that evil, not only in Western societies, but also in other societies subject to Western control or influence. This was possible only because the anti-slavery movement coincided with an era in which Western power and hegemony were at their zenith, so that it was essentially European imperialism which ended slavery. Let me repeat that, because you don't hear that.
Yeah, you need to repeat that, but you hear the exact opposite of what you
said. You had to hear the exact opposite. He said this in his book. He said, so it was essentially European imperialism which ended slavery. Continuing to quote from Sowell, he says, "This idea might seem shocking, not because it does not fit the facts, but because it does not fit the prevailing vision of our time," end quote. Now, many know well the history of slavery in our country. Far too few.
Any comments to that point before they get into another topic here?
No, I just remembered you did a show with Nathaniel. That's exactly, he was going against the colonists.
Right,
the pastor,
right.
Remember that? And he was arguing against the Bible, using the Bible. That was interesting.
Right.
I just happen to remember that show when he said that.
And yet, at the same time, he hated the Bible and called the Bible a fairy tale. But he's using the Bible. The book he calls a fairy tale, he's using it to establish his arguments. What a moron that guy was.
I know.
Okay.
Know the story of many abolitionists and others who at the cost of some of their lives, actually went about eradicating slavery. Now they did this on the basis of understanding the Christian worldview, and they were willing to risk their lives to end slavery both in America and abroad. Now, Marxist ideology is formulated based upon the disdain and violation of the 10th commandment, that thou shalt not covet. Marxism leverages this evil in the human heart for the purpose of creating chaos and for overthrowing government. And that's the point in the previous section that you just made. That's exactly what Marxism does. And so I want to end on that point, but I think again, we've definitely made the case. I know we've got more to go.
Great thoughts, brother. You know, many of our listeners, Omaha, may be familiar with Karl Marx from his books Das Kapital, which he published in 1867. Perhaps more famously, they're familiar with his Communist Manifesto, which he co-authored with the German philosopher and fellow communist Friedrich Engels in 1848. Now, in the Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx said this, quote, "When, in the course of development, class distinctions have disappeared and all production has been concentrated in the hands of a vast association of the whole nation, the public power will lose its political character. Political power, properly so called, is merely the organized power of one class for oppressing another," unquote. Now, in the book The Dictators, Hitler's Germany, Stalin's Russia, author Richard Overy writes this, "Censorship in Germany differed from Soviet practice in one important respect. There was no attempt to reform artistic output, since everything likely to be proscribed was, by definition, the product of, quote, cultural Bolshevism, unquote, or Jewish or alien. Cultural products were divided up into those that were acceptable and those that were not." Now, let me pause right here. Let me pause from quoting Richard Overy from his book, The Dictators. As you listen to me, listeners, listen to what I'm saying.
We're going to end it here at the 1 hour 55-minute mark, 1 hour, 55-minute. And
okay.
final comments on your part.
Well, I think if you followed this to the logical conclusion, all these movements out there, you'll not only be at war with the brethren, but with the Lord himself. Because this is to end Christianity or end any religious system at the end of the day. That's what it will do. Your comment?
Well, yeah, like you said, we would be in trouble with God because if you follow Marxism, he was an atheist. He wanted nothing
mm-hmm.
to do with God. He did not want God in government. He did not want God in the lives of the people. He wanted to destroy what God had established. What was the first thing God established? The human family, Adam and Eve, right?
Mm-hmm.
Marx wanted
yeah.
to destroy that. We see this in society today where they're out to destroy the family, out to get
yes.
they can't wait to get daddy out of the house, mommy dependent on government,
mm-hmm.
our daughters getting pregnant so that they can run them over to the abortion clinics to get rid of the babies. I mean, this is a
yeah.
destructive government, devoid of God, devoid of the Spirit of God. And so,
that's
yeah,
right.
maybe at one time America was a Christian nation, but not today. Sorry, not today.
Nope.
Not today.
Nope.
So, great show as
nope.
always. These brothers are
Thank
a wealth
you.
Of information. They are like
yes.
an encyclopedia, these guys.
Yes,
you
I've
know,
enjoyed just, listening and learning from them. Myself.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. So you, my dear sister, you have the last word.
Well, that was it. Just have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Be blessed. And thank you very much for helping again, bro. Have a great day.
No problem. That's my ministry, pushing buttons.
Oh,
Amen.
It isn't. Come on. It is not. All right.
God bless.
All right.
Shout joyfully to the Lord, all the earth. Come worshiping before the throne of God. For the Lord, he is good, and his love endures forever.